Hey, you're listening to the Canadian Agent Missional Podcast, and this is episode 100. We're going to be spending some time to reflect on our journey and what we still think about being Canadian, Asian, and missional. Let's do this! Hey everyone, thank you guys so much for joining us on this episode again and being part of our conversation. And especially thank you for all the listeners who have joined us for all these 100 episodes that we have been on. And today we're going to take some time to reflect a little bit about the journey of this podcast as it's hitting its 100th full episode. We put out almost 150 episodes with a lot of our side episodes, but this is our 100th episode officially. And so this is a cause for celebration and a lot of time to continue to think about, do we believe the same things that we did when we started this podcast? Have things changed? How are we feeling now? As always, around the table, we have all the hosts. So Shu, Xenia, and Bernard are here. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Pretty good.
Yo, yo.
This is exciting. I feel like this has been an ongoing conversation that started before this podcast, led into this podcast. Around 2017, we were starting to plan and work towards it. And then it officially launched, like the first episodes went out in 2018 at the start. And then Xenia joined on as a host midway in. And it's been a fun ride. There's a lot to be thinking about. How are you guys feeling now that we've hit 100 official episodes?
I think it's wild.
It's a lot of years. I mean, if you think about it, like there's kids that are born, there's like engagement that's happened. We have a pandemic that's gone through, studies that have started and almost done, right? So there's a lot of life change even through it.
Yeah. Did you graduate with your doctorate?
I try not to think about it too much.
It's been blocked from the memory.
But I think our podcast has significantly improved in listenership since Xenia's come on board.
That is true.
And it's gone better.
I hear that all the time.
Oh, man.
There's a deep appreciation for Xenia and her perspective and what she brings. Absolutely. Xenia, how do you feel? You joined in partway through. How does it feel like to think that this podcast that you've been on is now hitting 100 episodes?
Yeah, I mean, it's been quite the journey. Just thinking about like where I was even in 2017 when you guys started, I was in Montreal.
Yeah.
I wasn't even living in Toronto at the time, was I?
Everyone in Toronto knows you and, you know, was always like, you know, we're Xenia.
Everyone.
It's true.
Everyone.
Everyone. The millions.
It's an exaggeration.
And millions.
Friends, this is an exaggeration.
I just want to put this out there, but when someone had heard that later on this coming year, you'll be taking on a new position and not being in Toronto, they said, oh, Toronto's losing one of the best parts, and that's you. So thank you so much for being on this podcast with us.
I'm honored you think that. I'm also sad I am moving to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually haven't said this out publicly, so this is the official announcement, I guess.
Oh, there it is. You heard it.
Here first.
First official. Oh, man. So we got stuff to reflect upon. This, from the first day, you know, we called it the Canadian Asian Missional Podcast. And even breaking apart those three words in particular, I feel that things have changed even about how we feel about all three of those words. And so we're going to take a little time to kind of unpack those three words in our podcast today and just share some of our thoughts and experiences of maybe how we've moved in certain directions, how we've developed in certain ways. And then we're going to take some time to think about just like maybe where might some things be going in the future. So let's start off with the first one, Canadian. Over these last number of years, we've talked with a lot of people. We've talked with guests from Canada. We've talked with guests from outside Canada. And in particularly, I feel that this word, for me, has shifted too. In fact, even being a part of this podcast has helped even clarify this whole idea of like, we are not American, or we're not European, or we're not from China. Like, there's this something that's very specific when we talk about being Canadian. And it's been a continual journey of thinking about what does that mean for me and for ministry and churches, because it is a different context altogether. But any initial thoughts from you guys
I think because of the way I've been traveling over the last couple of years, people don't light up the same way when you say you're from Canada.
Interesting. So they used to.
Oh, totally. You stick a Canadian flag on your backpack. Americans used to do this all the time. Stick a Canadian flag on their backpack.
Mm.
Because it was, you know, Canada was, you know, the nice, friendly folk.
Not so much anymore?
I don't know. I don't know what's happened in the last decade where that's changed.
Maybe the politics that we receive from the States. Maybe that's impacted us a little bit.
Geopolitical reality has been so different in the last 10 years too. Like with the different conflicts, with, you know, just the positioning of different countries. So it's just very different. And Canada is not really a country that's, you know, upfront all the time. Like we're always kind of the alongside country. So I think, like, you know, like what you were saying, it could be part of our associative posture that kind of gives a different vibe to people, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, our landscape has shaped and has been changed and has morphed in different ways over the last 10 years. I remember coming out of my undergrad, this is more than 10 years ago now, but people were just so excited about multinational corporations and the end of the nation state. But I don't think that's actually proven to be true. I think we're more obsessed with the nation state than we've ever been at least in the last 3 or 4 years.
Mm.
So that's interesting.
And it's kind of interesting because, like, it's not that easy to define.
No.
Especially for Canadians.
Right.
You know, like, yeah. it's not a clear cut, like, nation state like the US, which is like there are particularities. We were kind of like super fuzzy. It's like, yeah, kind of ish, you know?
Right.
Similarly, I used to think that there is a bit more of this conversation around multiculturalism and more of a, you know, the mosaic versus the melting pot kind of stuff. But I think it's kind of shifted now, at least from, I don't know, personal observation, that we're more about what we're against or what we don't want to be anymore as Canadians. So there's a lot of, you know, decolonizing work, trying to identify the things that haven't been as inclusive or accepted in Canada. And I find that conversation is very much on the table now more than before, more than ever kind of thing. And it's equating, you know, we used to say like westernized, right? And I think now it's being even more upfront. It's like, no, that's even more white colonialism kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's kind of infiltrated now how, like, Canadian, you know, at least the current government, you know, kind of thing and how they kind of talk about it. But then even within church, I think I just see people kind of like, if you default to a Western kind of thing, is it just you don't realize the waters that you're swimming in kind of thing in that kind of white Western culture? So I don't know. I find that the conversation's almost shifted towards that a bit more, especially in the, I don't know, if we ever talk about culture in the Asian church in that way. But yeah, I don't know. I've just been kind of rummaging on that.
But I find that sometimes that's kind of like surface level though. Like it doesn't actually go
sure.
deep.
Yeah.
Like it's just oh yeah, like this is an issue. We just got to bring it up front. But then it's like nothing changed. No system change.
No, that's right. Real
change. Like
it's very, it is people change, putting change in a particular way that just a few people maybe in power want to do. You know,
Well, you know, just even watching the last Canada Reads competition, I was really impressed with the array of books that were coming out and the people who were on the panel who were defending those books, you know? So, I mean, again, how many people read? I don't know. But enough that it's still a thing, I guess.
Yes. You know, even for you to take a look at that list and the way that people are engaging in that, what did that kind of reveal in terms of culture and Canadian culture?
Yeah, so I think this generation of CanLit is increasingly being defined as transnational, transcultural, and even postnational.
Mm.
It's a direct quote from the Oxford Handbook of Canadian Literature.
Is that too nondescript, though?
No,
it sounds like it's too in response to something. It's like what we're not rather than what we are.
Yeah, but it's so interesting, right? Because we're getting these stories. So Madeleine Tien is probably one of my favorite Canadian authors at the moment. And I mean, first of all, she writes so beautifully and her book is often fragmented narrative and there's multiple locations, multiple cultures going at all at once. But it's very distinctly a Canadian book because her writing embodies what it means to be a Canadian in this time, while also inhabiting multiple worlds.
Mm.
So you know, because this is really fresh in my head because I was just writing on it. She's got this essay called On Structure in an anthology called Letters to Young Writers of Color or something like that. And she talks about how she's sitting down in Vancouver in 2021 when Highway 1 is being flooded, separating Vancouver from the rest of Canada. That's a very distinct Canadian experience.
Sure.
But then she talks about looking west, and she's talking about looking towards the Pacific Ocean, towards the islands of her childhood. And I think, yes, in two paragraphs, she's captured so many Canadians' experience.
Mm.
That's interesting that there's that almost relationship to the land itself, too, where it's like, you know, in association and in connection with, you know, this is home or this is like where I'm from, and this geographical makeup is unique and distinct for us.
Because, I mean, you know, we talk about white settler context. They haven't even been around for all that long because we're still such a young country. And so I think in a lot of respects, the last 10 years has been Canada's coming of age.
Mm. Yeah, we're that's a cool way to describe it. Adolescence. Puberty.
Hi, Mom.
But even something, what you guys were talking about earlier too, but just kind of the Western mentality, right? Like, that is also a very generalized sense. And what does that mean for Canada? Because you can't just say Western and lump in everything to it. Then it's like, well, like all these countries will be considered Western in thought. There's a very unique way that it takes place and is expressed here. And also the makeup of the people, the makeup of the geography, that all plays a part into it. Well, one thing that I don't believe has changed since this podcast started, I believe we still have the same prime minister.
For now.
You know, that's true.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's been a little while.
We'll see.
Yeah, as for some things, like I think about my own experience growing up in Ottawa and then coming to Toronto and then experiencing a lot of different things in terms of what does it mean to be thinking about myself or identifying as a Canadian, because there's so much that even between Ottawa and Toronto, it just felt very different. And the pace of life, the way that people kind of interacted with each other was very different. But of course, that was related to the makeup of the people there as well. But yeah, I think I'm still trying to figure it out in the sense that, you know, being Canadian is not just not being American or not being any other kind of nationality, but it's, you know, what does it mean? And is it something to hold on to? Is it something to actually consider that this is part of how we are continuing to live out our existence as Canadians?
You know, I still harp on, you know, when we talked about multiculturalism, you know, she had mentioned about the mosaic or the melting pot. I still think Canada is neither. I think we are more of a kaleidoscope. Like there is ebb and flows and change. Like as a country that is made up of a lot of immigration is still heavy in Canada.
Yeah.
So like the context of Canada keeps changing. So it's not like this kind of stuck mosaic of a lot of different parts, but it's kind of moving.
Like right? Ever evolving.
At least for now, right? And so I think that's also kind of the nebulous reality. Like you just can't fully grip it because it's still in its kind of formative space.
Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting time to be in kind of Canadian history and kind of being a Canadian. But let's switch gears for a second. Let's talk about the second word of our name, Asian. What does it mean to be Asian in... And have we expanded our understanding of that? Have we thought differently about it? I would say that, you know, as a podcast that also wants to really have that lens and approach topics from that perspective is something that's been important to us because we find it's a unique thing too. But I think there's this one area has changed for me too, because I think there might have been some history and some of those traditions bringing into what we initially thought about when we started our podcast, when we've come out of Asian churches and trying to either respond or react or to kind of work through things. But even now, I find myself seeing something new. I mean, over the last number of years, hearing about Hong Kong immigrants coming, but that's not the same as the Hong Kong immigrants that came 56 years ago. There's more coming from different parts of Asia too, you know, different parts of China and, you know, Philippines, Japanese. And so the spectrum is changing. And so I think for me too, I'm kind of recognizing that things are changing. And once again, it can't be just this catch-all word that we're using as Asian. I mean, even for me, like, there was a time where I think it became easy to get around just knowing Cantonese as a Chinese-Canadian person. But then there are more and more Mandarin speakers, and I don't know Mandarin. So
time to learn, John.
Time to learn. Maybe on that list of things to learn way down the line. But now it's even thinking about, like, okay, if I'm going to love my neighbor, if I'm going to get to know families, but they're primarily Mandarin speaking and they come from a different mindset and a different culture, then what does that mean too? I can't have those assumptions anymore that we've had some shared history or kind of shared mentality. It's different.
You know, I think what's been really interesting to me is the spillover of what's been happening in American politics over to Canada. Like, I think about the shooting a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rise of anti-Asian sentiment. But it was mostly because people kept being mistaken for being Chinese.
Yeah.
And then with the other redo-over of the Cold War sentiment, or maybe the Cold War never left us. Yeah, again, like maybe it's racism that unites our experience.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, in the States, Asian Americans is a political bloc.
Right.
It was formed out of the Third World Liberation Front. They need to deal with their pro-China stance. Up here, we don't have that experience. We've never organized the same way.
Mm.
We don't think about our political systems in the same way. And it's particularly clear when you see immigrants come in from different places and they land here and they think that it's Canadian politics is the same as American politics, and you go, no, that's not how that works.
We're more confusing.
I don't know if we're more confusing. We have more than two parties.
Yeah.
We're more socialist. And so to be Asian in Canada, it's complicated. There's certainly themes and variations on the theme, but I mean, for a long time, people would say, like, oh yeah, you're Asian, right? You celebrate Chinese New Year, and you're like, first of all, Lunar New Year. And more than just Chinese people celebrate it. And the East Asian experience doesn't define all of
Asians.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And even the term East Asian is problematic, but I'll save that for another day.
Southeast, Northwest.
No, I'm just going to say it. They're just CIA terms, guys.
Oh. I think something that's changed is, as Xenia loves to poke at a lot of things, I think, on the Asian side, and it's caused me to think a lot with, and I think with our episode with Justin C, mm-hmm. like thinking about colonialism that happens in the country of China versus you're thinking everything is Chinese in a certain way, but is it Sino? Is like, what's happening even within that area that thus affects us here? That we're just like, okay, well, me being Chinese means everything back in China or some of that degree. But I would say us as Canadians or Chinese Canadians, Asian Canadians, a lot of us don't even know where our cultural roots come from and what's the stories behind that. And I find that has kind of made me question a lot of things where I was like, oh, I haven't thought even that much deeper onto where my cultural roots come from, like why my parents are from a certain village or, you know, why is that different from someone else's village, that kind of thing. But what's made me think, though, when we come as a church in this area, a lot of things that do kind of hold us together is you hope there is some kind of welcoming atmosphere, that there's some kind of, you know, well, you want to say it's Christ-like, but then some of the culture built in as well. Is it, you know, you can call it Southern hospitality if you're in the, you know, South or whatever, but then it's just like, but it's like, as Canadians, it's like, is there somewhat that we are welcoming as, you know, Asians or Chinese in particular, are you welcoming the stranger because you're like Jesus welcoming, or is it just that that's what your tradition has always done, your cultural kind of makeup has always done, and you were shown that from your parents or something like that. So I don't know, I've been thinking a bit at times of that. What does that mean? And And of course, should we do more research into that? And should, you know, other people help us with that? I don't know. Help us study that more. I don't know. That kind of stuff.
I mean, I was laughing about this maybe like a year ago, but a friend of mine was writing a major paper and she was like, yeah, my white professors keep asking me to talk about hospitality. What is hospitality? And I was like, you know, just who we are, I guess. Why do we have to talk about hospitality? Is it a category? I don't know.
Like in terms of Asian hospitality?
Right.
Oh.
It depends on like,
to talk about it, right?
Who's the recipient of, you know, this research or study? And I guess it is, but it depends on who's shaping it, right?
Right. And so, for whom.
Yeah. And so there's that kind of complexity to it as well.
Yeah. I mean, there was no question when I was growing up that going over to my Sri Lankan friend's house, there was going to be food. Hmm. Probably food that was too spicy for me, but there was always going to be food. I was never going to be sent home hungry.
Except the rice. The rice not spicy.
You know, it was a lot more spice than I could handle at the time. But, you know, it was really shocking to me that when I went to university and the majority of my friends were of Western European descent, there was no food. Maybe tea, but no food.
And what kind of tea?
Oh, you know, black tea. But it was also the Earl like, Grey, they're hot. Like, we really have to learn that, you know, feeding people is important. I'm like, really? Okay. But then it became a tool for mission. And I was like, no, y'all, this is what you just do. This is just how you love people.
Right. I think that's what I've kind of noticed too from the conversations we've had over our, you know, our run of this podcast is when we've had a chance to also listen to different people's stories and perspectives and experiences, that it becomes there's a richer sense of what does it mean to be Asian or Canadian Asian. But there's also a lot that just can't be a generalized sense. I mean, there are nuances to each Asian background and that not only affects kind of, you know, our way of approaching something like hospitality, but also like the church and how we connect to the world. And so, yeah, I think, you know, if anything, for me, the whole idea about being Asian and listening to a lot of different, you know, different people's perspectives has made it much more wider. For me, it hasn't been confusing. It's just been more appreciation that it's like, wow, like, you know, these things are a little bit different, but there are certain things that are shared. And I think there's a commonality, but there's also certain things that are distinct. Moving on to our last word, missional.
Not podcast.
We could go there.
I guess we could go there.
Existential term now.
Podcast. Well, with the word podcast, like, fourth wall. Do people even listen to podcasts anymore? Yeah. That's the major change.
With the go back to it's vodcasting.
Just, it's just AI listening right now.
Yeah. If you're listening right now, then you are listening to a podcast. But let's go back to the word missional. And so for this, I think for me, it's been interesting to see kind of the trajectory and the development of it, because at one time it seemed to be something that was very helpful in terms of how we thought about discipleship and the church. But then the more it got used, the more it became less descript and less helpful, to a point where I don't even know if people are using it, or if when they use it, are they even meaning the same thing anymore? And of course, the writers of it.
Everything's missional now. Yeah,
that's right. And the original people who coined the term, I think are starting to not use it anymore.
Yes, no, they probably even kind of moved away from it, like slightly, right? Like, or greatly. But when everything is something, then nothing is, because then it just loses whatever the substance it
How
is.
How nihilist of you.
No, I'm just saying a factual thing, that we need something more robust, something that we can actually use to as an identity or whatnot. But yeah, I think this has changed for the most. Even Bernard and I were in a class a while ago, and this was with our professor, Alan Roxburgh, and he was someone who was part of the early kind of movement of some of the missional language and teaching on it. And even for him, he realized he needed to shift because it became less and less helpful for Christians and for the church And especially, I think, on the side where he saw it become something that was just another model that churches adopted, that believed it could be a savior for their church. But he's like, no, but that was not what it was about, and needing to kind of, for him to kind of make that pivot as well. So yeah, for you guys, missional, do you guys even find yourself using it regularly? And what does it mean to you? Has it changed over this last several years?
I think since we started the podcast, I think I've overused that term to the point where now for the past, I think, 6 years now, I've stopped using the term discipleship and missional in my in my church, like at least my context. I've had to sort that out in other ways and almost just, how can we model this without making this the buzzword or making this kind of, again, like it means nothing. I'm part of a multi-site church. Our main campus, people would say everything that they're doing is missional. It's like, if I walk the dog, it's missional. If I you know, go talk to this person, it's missional. All these kind of things. And not that some of these things aren't part of God's mission in joining him, what he's doing, but it just gave everyone a way to say that I could do whatever I want and I'm following Jesus or something like that. Mm. And I'm like, are you really? Is this really happening? It's just like, so it was more just like, okay, how can we start just practicing some of this without having to use the grandiose buzzword? So I think for me, thinking through how I was learning from certain pastors and theologians, I had to kind of take myself out of it too, because I think something else you feel at times for people is just like, you talk about this word missional, but then you have missional guilt because you're not doing these missional things that people are telling you to do. And then you feel bad. And then you're like, I should do this. And then there's a missional anxiety and all these kind of things.
The missional should.
Yeah. that's not what it's supposed to be. Yeah.
No, but I think there's another effect. People then were talking about like, okay, I have this passion, and therefore I can use this, like kind of you're talking about, use this passion to be on mission. But I think it opened up a door, then everyone's like, okay, you know, what is this thing that I'm passionate about? And that could be the context for mission, where then it became either more individualistic or it became something that also was not discerned among a community of people, and it leading to everyone wanting to start their own thing. Yeah.
The natural impulse in most of our traditional churches is to make it into a program.
Yeah.
Right? A missional program, a discipleship program, or these kind of things. And there are spaces for that. Don't get me wrong. I like to think of them as like training wheels. But the thing is that if it's only kind of like, you know, here's the program. Oh, you didn't come to the program, or we didn't get people through the program. You know, it's almost like, well, where's the relational end to it? Mm. And people can have their, I think, individual mission that I think God's impressing on their heart, but you also can't force everyone to go through something like that. And it's a bit more, the church is a bit more organic than I think at times what we've, or you know, my context, like we've made it to be.
Like that kind of programmic feel was always undergirding it. And maybe it lost that sense of organic or...
And it goes back to Alan Roxburgh's, like, we're not just searching for a new model to get everyone through, you know, kind of thing. But I think the way of Jesus is a bit more contextual on that level when you're dealing with people. But that has to be discerned and talked through, discussed.
I mean, it's not to say that, like, people discerning and wrestling through what does it mean to join God and what he's doing, it doesn't mean that it might not have this revitalizing effect in a church, but it's not a formula or it's not a fad or, you know, a technique then that, you know, is supposed to save the church.
Package it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I wonder if one of the gifts that the church, and I know not every church embrace it, but it was something that's brought to the forefront, is the ability to really wrestle with deconstruction, because that's been not just a buzzword, but it's actually kind of coming to play for people to unravel things. And when the unraveling happens, the questions of like, well, what does it even mean, and where does it come from? And of course, like I said, not everybody embraces, because there's people that are probably still afraid of this word, which we've actually done an episode on it, so you can go back to that one.
Good callback.
But just like, you know, I think that really is the gift for us to go deeper and to, you know, not just go through the minutiae of things, but actually, you know, like what is the heart of Jesus? What is the Holy Spirit actually doing, you know, in the particular context?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the last couple of years has kind of give rise to that. Now, you know, of course, we are kind of wrestling and struggling with, well, how then do we reconstruct things, right?
Yeah, that's the frustrating thing for me. Like, I really don't like the term deconstruction as kind of how I think a lot of people, like, this is the space of deconstruction. I think a healthy place should always have deconstructing things happening. If you're saying, like, you know, this, we should be humble enough to go, maybe this is not the way to follow Jesus, you know, kind of thing. If that's built into the stuff, it would be healthier. But this is not. We have this kind of deconstruction kind of time. But I do miss the generative side of that, that I feel is missing. And I kind of enjoy that side a bit more when I hear people like, there is a revitalization or there's something, oh, like, we were wrong about this. Maybe God is leading us here. Maybe God has changed our view on this, on this way.
I just wonder if the generative voices are there, but they're more quiet.
Hmm.
And then the deconstructive voices are much louder.
Oh, it's so sexy to be deconstructed.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I don't want an answer. I just want to critique the hell out of everything.
Isn't that just the emerging church, you know, back then?
Yeah, totally.
You know, I think for a lot of people, it's a real experience. And they're going kind of through those crises of faith. And, you know, how do we then walk through that together and not to see it as a threat and not to see it as, you know, doing harm, but like maybe accept it as a natural part that we need to reflect and maybe even repent and course correct along the way.
I think the gift of missional literature, the missional church movement, whatever you want to call that, is that it really called people to just be human again, to live in light of who God is in your own life. Right? It was the emphasis on the care for the poor. It was paying attention to your neighborhood. It was learn to love your neighbor, because we lived in a world where we were and are totally disconnected from who our neighbors were. And so I think there was a lot of importance in that, where it sort of, and I think this happens every single time, right? Like, when something moves from the grassroots into the mainstream, structures become reified. They just harden. And I think that's when you know that something's gone wrong, because it becomes a power and principality question. When you stop listening to who God is and you depend on structures to get you to where God is, well, the structures then become your gods.
Mm. There's, you know, something, you know, you said, you know, it's so hard because, you know, you do want to be part of the more generative side of things, and you're kind of addressing how the structures and powers are kind of taking over. And if you think about it, right, like, for the early church, like after the resurrection church, like that's what actually they were doing. They were deconstructing their Jewish narrative, trying to figure out, well, how is Jesus actually intersecting, and how is he now the Messiah, the Lord, the King, and then begin to wrestle and work out this generative way of life. But it's not an overnight thing.
No.
But yet our culture today, it's like, no, I just want the answer. Just give me the 10 steps to plant a church. Wink, wink.
You know, which, you know, you bringing up kind of the whole idea of the early church is, how often is the emphasis on, like, okay, look at Acts 2, 42 to 45, and those are the actions that we need to do. I rarely have heard anyone talk about what you just said, Xenia, which is like to be fully human again, as God has called us to be human, to love our neighbor, to live in that way. But then it becomes more so like, oh no, this has to be done in a way that it produces something or has a specific goal or effect. But yeah, like, you know, the whole idea of mission, I love how it could be bringing us back to being fully human.
Yeah, and I think the word missional is such a contentious word these days because of how closely the missionary movements have been tied to the acts of the empire.
Mm.
I really saw the decline of that after what happened with John Chow. Do you remember that a couple of years back? This kid decides that he's going to gung-ho it into a so-called abandoned, like this lost...
Sentinel or something. Yeah.
And it was like, well, no, people have the capacity to preserve their culture, and they're not a lost people. But these are theological categories that we've ingrained in people to believe that there are people beyond the reach of God, and that only we ourselves can reach them for God.
Yeah.
Which I think is idolatry. We've just worshipped ourselves. There is no one beyond God's reach, guys.
And then once we reach every single person, Jesus will make Jesus come back.
We're hastening.
Right?
Come on.
I'm being sarcastic, no way.
Well, but it's like this militancy to the Christian movement that has just plagued us since our entwinement with power.
But that's the thing. Being militant about something can be lived out and expressed as in the terms of being missional, but it could be anything too. You could be militant about so many different things too.
Yeah, it's the slow slide towards fascism.
Oh, this episode has it all. We're going to wrap up this episode with a little bit, maybe from a more hopeful standpoint, is just kind of thinking and dreaming a little bit about where things headed. You know, where are things headed in all three of these kind of categories? And maybe we can share on one or two of them. Where are things headed in the kind of Canadian-Asian context? Where is Canadian-Asian churches headed? Where is perhaps even continuing to wrestle and develop this whole idea of joining God in his mission headed? Things have changed over the last number of years. And of course, pandemic, I think, you know, revealed a lot and kind of, you know, disrupted us a lot. But as we're kind of in this place, you know, in 2024, where are kind of things headed? What are you guys hopeful for?
So I'm responding to an EMS plenary session this afternoon. And I said to a friend last night, I feel like I could pull my EMS plenary response from 2 or 3 years ago and say the same thing, which is, let's just love God and love our neighbor. And I don't know why I have to keep harping on this, but, you know, God's been doing it longer than I have. So, you know, fair enough. But that's what I want and hope for our churches, that we actually sit and listen to people and listen to what God is doing and learn to love God and worship God and love our neighbor. I don't know that it gets more complicated than that.
Mm.
I don't know that, you know, I think the primary task for the pastor, for church leaders, whatever that means, the formational task ahead is just teaching people how to be human again.
Mm.
To teach people, you don't need to always have an opinion. Actually, the gracious thing is actually just sitting there and in silence, maybe, and praying with God's Spirit to actually hear what God is doing in our world. We don't need to actually strategize the next new thing in order for us to be faithful. But you know what? I don't lead a church, so I can say that.
But I would say that's where a lot of my hopefulness comes from, because I see glimpses of it. In the mess, in the complexity, it's happening. And God is breaking through in people's lives and in communities and shaping us in that way. But there's still a lot to contend with. And of course, there's a lot of structures and a lot of traditions to continue to work through and work with. So, you know, my hopefulness is that God is doing that, what you just said, in and amongst us. It's not seen so much from the macro or maybe as a result of one of those big campaigns. It's more seen in kind of the more small, local, and maybe sometimes even the overlooked parts of who we are. But it is happening. And I think when I see it, I just like, wow, God, you're so good in this way. But then sometimes I just get beaten back on some other things. Just like, it's hard. It's hard, God.
Well, with that, at least for some of us, we're still working within current systems, current traditions. And I think, yeah, my hope is that, I don't know, maybe it's also age. I don't know. I guess getting over the hill. At least I am. I feel it.
What?
Getting that, but there is start of a shift. I think, at least for me, it's like, how do you help, you know, other people be faithful
yes.
in that way, walking with them, and like I think like for what Xenia was saying about starting something, you know, starting the new strategy or whatever. It's just like it harkens me back to like Andrew Root's kind of thing about his critique about creativity and how we're trying to just move things super fast, super forward, all this kind of things. But how do we slow down is almost the other side. Mm-hmm. And how do we, what does faithfulness look like if we were, you know, majoring on some of those majors again a bit more? And yeah, I'm just, I think that's missional.
Sure.
That is, I think, following Christ in that way a bit more, slowing down, but being slower, I think, just where I'm at. I don't know, maybe it's just personally, like walking with my congregation. Yeah, it's just instead of getting them to be all hyped up about this or that, but what does it look, what does that faithfulness look like in the everyday? And can they do that? Can they do, how's their relationship with God and how's their relationship with people around them? Like, what does that look like following Christ?
Now, quick follow-up to that is, because you've talked about this on this podcast before, about your hope for renewal within current structures and systems. Do you feel like what you just shared right there was part of how you see renewal can happen?
I still think some people will need to be sacrificed.
Oh, man.
Yeah, like I know it, man. You're like, you might have to die as still a bridge builder. I still think so.
Sure.
Like, that might be the role God's called you to play, you know? So it's possible, but it's not always pretty.
Yeah.
Which, if you want to go back to the disciples, the apostles' disciples, well, some of them got crucified.
But some?
Although, yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
You know, I really resonate with, you know, what everybody has said. Like, what I've been observing and seeing is how the polarization is still such a strong narrative. And part of the polarization is the confident in a single story.
Mm.
And I wonder if the hope of the church actually goes back a little bit to the embrace of the mysticism of who God is, the mystery of who God is, and relinquishing the control and kind of, you know, this power over, it's like we are powering over God instead of embracing the mystery that is God, being able to sit in spaces that are not certain, but working, you know, working it out. What is loving God and loving people? What does that look like? Not using power to do that.
Wow. Yes.
And so I think that's kind of my hope, because, you know, we've had Andrew Root on before. We've talked about this, you know, secular age a lot, this kind of transcendence that's missing. And in many ways, our churches still operate within the imminent. And so as the church begins to break away from that and kind of embrace the transcendental, the transcendence, you know, God divine, like, I think that's the hope.
Mm.
What does C.S. Lewis say about Aslan? He's not a tame lion.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's good.
But he's good.
Oh, man, lots to think about and continue to reflect on, and also thinking about what's to come. As always, we'd love to hear from you as well. What did you think about what we shared about in this episode? Has your views of being Canadian, Asian, and missional changed over the years as well? We'd love to hear from you. You can reach out to us through Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or by email. Our email address is contact.campodcast@gmail.com. That's contact.campodcast@gmail.com. If you haven't done so already, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast. Please share it with others, as this helps get the conversation out there. As always, you've been listening to the Canadian Asian Missional Podcast, and we hope you'll join us and continue to join us on this journey. See you next time.